Everyone agrees, bacon makes everything better. Even marketing. This is the Bacon Podcast, where you'll learn to cure your marketing.
And make your business sizzle. Can't believe I said that.
Internet marketing. Online marketing. Social media tips and techniques. Now, to help you bring more bacon home, the master of marketing sizzle, Brian Basilico. This is the Bacon Podcast.
Welcome, everybody. I'm your host, Brian Basilico, and this is the podcast where you learn to make your business sizzle online. So are you ready to fry up some new business?
Hey, peeps, I've got a great guest today. His name is Jeff Ward, and he is not only a friend, in fairness, he's a client because we're working together on building some stuff for him. But really, I've known Jeff more from his work as a newspaper person from way back yonder, and have followed him for years and learned more about him. So today we're going to be talking about the death of news. And so I know it's not a very happy subject, but Jeff, man, how are you doing today?
I am good. How are you, Brian?
Awesome. So when we get started, I like to have people kind of get to know you a little bit, especially since you're local to Chicago. So some people in Alabama or Texas or California may not know who you are. So let's go through a little bit of your backstory. So how did you go from being a database programmer to a stock trader to an inventor to a newspaper opinion columnist? Sounds like a very, very kind of wiggly road, dude.
Well, yeah, it's, you know, in the words of that great philosopher, Jerry Garcia, this truly is a long, strange trip. But I happened to, from hiding in Northwestern, playing on, 1975 computer terminals, doing games. The Plato system was mentioned in the movie 2001, Space Odyssey. I could type. So everywhere I went, every job I got, I ended up on the word processor of the computer. As part of that, I learned to do databases. Got good at it. Went to a users group meeting. My first client was Wrigley Gum. That's a good first client to have, Brian. Built up a pretty good portfolio. Wrigley, Ameritech, USG, Motorola, Philips Electronics, and more. But after 17 years, it gets kind of hard to keep up as fast as the computer world goes. And most of those years were spent following people who made utterly unrealistic promises at these companies and could not fulfill those promises. And whenever you're the second one in, you get three times the scrutiny of the person who screwed up to begin with. That got kind of old. So I was always interested in trading. I had made enough money consulting. I made the leap. But back then, I hadn't quite gotten my brain wiring diagnosis down. Then a friend and I were talking about eBay and selling stuff. And I was like, if we invented something, you could sell it forever. And so I invented a portable insulated laptop desk called the Lapinator. It sold very well on eBay. It ended up in catalogs like Solutions. We got great reviews from people like PC Magazine and the Wall Street Journal. And I actually took the product to number two in the market. But then competition came barreling in from China and other places. Laptops have kind of given way to tablets. But the Kane County Chronicle gave me three guest columns. I then hooked up with the Aurora Beacon News, and writing has always been one of my passions, and I started spending way too much time on that.
Well, that's a kind of a good path to have, and I'm so glad you didn't invent a floppy disk cleaner or something like that, because it didn't have quite the shelf life as a laptop stand. And great stories, man. I mean, it goes to show how you've reinvented and evolved over time. And but the last one is the reason that we're here, and that is
right.
Newspapers. And I remember those. I talk about newspapers and phone books and the things of the past, that was all we had. You had want to go find a job, you go to the newspaper, you look in the classified section. You wanted to contact somebody, all Correct. We had was a telephone. We didn't have the internet, we didn't have email, we didn't have websites and all those kind of things.
So, we did not.
And so the question becomes, the first major question is what in your opinion, what in your world killed newspapers? And the other question that I want to ask you is, did you see it coming and why?
Well, I got into, I started writing for the Tri-City Suns, Tri-Cities being Geneva, Batavia, and St. Charles, Illinois. I was in all three, and I did move to the Beacon News rather quickly. Again, the Aurora Beacon News. It started in 2006, May 24th, 2006. And that was the last good year for newspapers. When the Great Recession hit and the internet really started gaining steam, print media has since gone into a depression. I did see it coming. And I saw the average age of a newspaper reader. I saw what the kids were doing. And I would go to editors and say, you know, let me talk in front of groups of people. Let's do this. Let's give out newspapers at high schools. But they didn't want to try anything new, and they didn't want to try anything that costs money. So they lost an opportunity to make that transition into this new media on so many levels, Brian. I mean, the first one is they lost out on classifieds to Craigslist. And, you know, classifieds were a license to print money. You really didn't. I mean, some newspapers went out of business. You know, Mike Royko wrote his famous lament for the death of the Daily News in Chicago. But that's because afternoon newspapers fell out of favor. So without the classifieds, you know, the kind of the bedrock, you know, the financial underpinning of these newspapers was gone. And again, newspapers could have survived that. But what you had at the time was a massive battle between content writers, reporters, columnists, and the classified people. You know, the editorial folks are like, no, we cannot charge for being on the internet. We need hits. And the classified people are saying, well, you know, if you don't charge for internet classifieds, you're done. And sadly, the no charging folks won. Paywalls are a relatively new thing. Paywall, of course, being you can't look at a newspaper online unless you pay for it. You know, but by the time they instituted paywalls, people were used to getting stuff for free. So when you teach someone they can get something for free, you cannot subsequently charge them for it. And that was a huge error. And yeah, I saw it coming. It was clear. You could see it had already hit the music industry. And it already did the same thing to them. And at that time, it was at a much more accelerated rate when you could download MP3s for free on all sorts of services. If you recall Napster, you could see this dynamic wasn't going to work. I mean, the music industry has since adjusted, and some of the biggest, you know, mutual fund operators, or I think even Warren Buffett was saying, you know, invest in streaming music. Mm-hmm. But music has a far greater appeal, especially to young people, than newspapers do.
Right. And, you know, you got to look at it too. And that was one of the smartest things that Apple did, was basically create the iPod, and they were mm-hmm. able to monetize the downloading, because bottom line is Napster, you know, was plagiarism. And last week's column, yeah, where people were stealing music. And, you know, that, and unfortunately, the music industry didn't know what to do about it. And then Apple turns around and says, hey, instead of people stealing music, how about if they buy it through us and you give us a portion of it? And they all said, no. And eventually, you know, Sony, being the last bastion, came in and said yes. So we've kind of looked at the death of why that happened. But I guess the question then is, now we're in a phase inside of the way that we communicate. Obviously, there's online stuff, there's blogging. I mean, I personally mm-hmm. think that another reason why newspapers died was not only that, but the fact that when you get the news, it's yesterday's news. It would show up in the morning, and it would be all the stories from yesterday, where, you know, the news cycle has gotten to the point, man, where you can go on Twitter and find out that this congressman just, you know, basically resigned minutes ago. And I'm not going to say which one because it dates the show. But the bottom line is, like, all of a sudden this Congress dude is not going to get reelected. It doesn't want to be reelected. And so stuff happens like now. The breeding of that also breeds out a lot of fake stuff, meaning that, you know, in newspapers, there's this protocol. There's a reporter's, I don't know if it's a reporter's creed or whatever, but you have two sources and you check them. And, you know, I've watched all the President's Men and, you know, movies like right. that, where, you know, there's this, like, it's almost like a badge or code of honor. And now anybody can post anything they want online.
And they do.
And they do often. Yes. So how does, you know, how is that affecting the credibility of news sources? Because a lot of people think that, you know, anything on cable news or any news channel is fake news, when those guys still do go through and do what reporters did.
Well, yeah, I mean, and this is the Trump effect, and this is fake news translated is, I don't want to have to believe that. But yes, you're essentially right. I mean, I think the reason I've survived, and I'm not certainly not making money at it, is because I was trained by some of the best editors there were. You know, the problem was they just kept rolling through them thinking that was going to solve their problem. And none of those editors are left. Zero. I learned from some of the best people on the planet. You know, I didn't come into this with a journalistic background. I was just an avid newspaper reader. And to answer your question, those guys understood that content will always sell. Look at the Wall Street Journal. Well, they were one of the first ones to install a paywall, and they write about stuff people want to read. You're dead on when you say I could go to the internet and get something right away. But what newspapers have always provided is the analysis that you can't even get on TV. I mean, now we do have a 24/7 news cycle, but still, you had well-trained journalists with savvy editors who put some effort into analyzing this and giving you something to think about or teaching you something you really didn't know. But what newspapers' first attempt to adapt to the change was to get rid of the talented people, force them out. I call it the coup of the mediocre, which tends to happen in any organization that's sinking. Those folks that flatter people and let's just keep doing it the way we always do it seem to win out in times of fear. So Roger Ebert, the great Sun-Times movie reviewer, said, you know, people are always going to want analysis. Well, newspapers abandoned that. So, and now on the net, I mean, you have people putting anything out there. And ironically, as you and I have discussed at different times, Brian, they'll believe that, but they won't believe CNN. So, and then inexplicably, you know, newspapers got rid of their best reporters and they just started hiring people right out of college, and they're horrific. Well, there's a local newspaper, a local suburban newspaper, they're a little more than a local newspaper, that just did a story on there's no Klan activity in Gurnee, Illinois. And I had a lot of fun with that blog post listing the other things that haven't happened that they might write about. Like, for example, Godzilla has not yet appeared off, you know, in the ocean outside Japan. They just did an article on a county, Kane County board issue, again, Kane County, Illinois, where they called an organization that opposed a board member's zoning variance an organization paid for by local contractors. Well, you know what we call them, Brian? Unions. And the written word is losing credibility because of this truly horrific adjustment to what is a truly scary financial time for print media. But, you know, the if you can't beat them, join them methodology has never worked, sir. Mm-hmm. I still say, I mean, my blog can get up to 20,000 hits a day, which is far more than the local newspapers, because I write interesting stories. I have sources. And I do my due diligence. It's really not that difficult.
Yeah. So now that brings me to the last question of the segment, and that is, as bloggers, okay, as people who are creating content out there, who are trying to educate, teach, and convince people that you're an influencer. You know, I mean, which is what this podcast mm-hmm. is about, what my blog is about. You know, in my world, there are people that, you know, hang up a shingle and call themselves gurus. when they couldn't guru themselves out of a paper bag. And then on the other side of the coin, then you've got, you know, people that really know their stuff and they're spending all this time, you know, trying to educate people. And it's really hard to tell the difference between, you know, somebody who's legit and somebody who isn't. So how do we bridge that gap? What things do we need to do as bloggers, as online communicators, to get people to understand there is a difference between just posting whatever the heck you want, true or false? You know, as far as I'm concerned, doing the project itself and actually working through the stuff and doing it for yourself is as much research as anything else, right? So how do we get people to kind of buy into all that stuff?
I don't know. You know, that's the problem, because on the one hand, there are times I lament that if I had started this 20 years earlier, I probably would have been a fairly popular syndicated print media columnist. But, you know, bad timing, sir, the last good year. But what those 8 years provided, Brian, was a wonderful education. How you do a story, where you can and can't go, what libel is, and the written word is libel, not slander, how to approach a source, how to build sources, which reporters today have no clue. So I got this amazing education from some of the best people on the planet. Even if you manage to get a freelance job with a local newspaper, and by freelance these days, I mean you don't get paid, you're just not going to get that education. I mean, so your only other alternative is to go to journalism school. That's expensive, and I wouldn't recommend it to anyone right now. You've got me thinking. It would be amazing if community colleges, junior colleges, would do courses on what it means to be a journalist for these bloggers, because that would at least give them some idea of how you approach these things. There's a reason I've never been sued, and that's because I had great teachers. It's a very dangerous proposition, because you can get sued.
Well, and one final question, and that is, I mean, you do this a lot. Yeah, you know, you've got your blog, you've got your podcast, you've done a lot of things. You are both a advocate and an enemy to just about everybody in the political world. How do you maintain credibility in this, as I said, fake news, I only want to believe what I want to believe news cycle that gets people to pay attention enough to want to actually read your stuff and get 20,000 downloads?
Thankfully, Brian, I already had credibility from being a well-regarded opinion columnist. So, and that was, of course, part of being this great team we discussed. But, you know, one of the things newspapers did abjectly incorrectly, when the Depression started to hit, was they either didn't cover local news or they got so hyper-local the stuff just wasn't interesting. I mean, when I go to I don't know who owns Patch now. When I go to one of those sites, there's just stuff nobody cares about. And then in another suburban newspaper, there's stuff going on in California. Nobody cares about that here, unless it's, you know, sadly a mass shooting of some sort. Thankfully, I had credibility. That's number one. Number two, local news is accessible to local people. This isn't a nebulous federal story or, you know, something in Florida. The truth tends to work its way out locally. And when you break a story and it turns out to be true, far more often than not, which has been the case for me, you maintain that credibility. I mean, there are people that really don't like me, but again, if I make a major mistake on a story, I get sued. But when I write a story about Kane County, I usually get three sources. There's all sorts of ways you can confirm the story. And then when it turns out to be true, it builds your credibility. And that's been my entire career. And that's what editors like Rick Nagel, Paul Harth, Mike Cetera, and Dave Perro taught me. You know, how you perform that kind of due diligence, how you develop sources you can trust. But when you tackle judges like I have, when you tackle the Kane County State's Attorney's Office like I have, when you tackle the Sheriff's Office, you better be right, Brian, or you're going to get in an awful lot of trouble.
Yes, absolutely. Anyways, Jeff, this has been a blast.
It has been.
Yeah, thank you so much for joining us today, man. I want to give people a chance to get a hold of you and also to know some of the things that you're doing. So let my peeps know about, you know, your blog and then also how they can get a hold of you, you know, online. What's the best way for them to do that?
Well, the blog, thefirstward.net, all spelled out, you know, T-H-E-F-I, et cetera. I do a series called Quick Hits Monday, Wednesday, Friday afternoons. As you know, I'm a campaign manager, Brian, and you can find that website at www.forward.com.me. I not only am I a campaign manager, but a political strategist, and I've recently, having covered so many trials, I'm moving into jury consulting. You can email me. The best address right now is Jeff N, as in Noel Ward, at comcast.net. Yeah, life is good.
All right, Jeff. Well, good stuff. Thanks again so much for joining us, man. It was a pleasure. I think you dropped some great sizzling hot knowledge bombs on my peeps. And I look forward to the next time.
Thank you, Brian.
Well, that's it for today's Bacon Podcast. We hope you enjoyed it and learned something today. If you did, please go to iTunes and give us a review. We appreciate all your feedback and comments. If you have any questions, go to www.baconpodcast.com/questions, and we'll make sure we get those answered for you. Till next time, keep sizzling.